Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Welcome, everyone, to the Goodish Girls. I am Cass, and today we are chatting with authors Rowan Adelaide and Christina Farley with our Indie Talk for this month. Thank you both so much for being here. I'm super excited to dive into both of your books today and talk a little bit about what it's been like for each of you in the indie world. So we're going to jump right into it. Christina, we are here today to talk about your most recent book, To Love a Grim. So tell me a little bit about your book, how it differs from others in its genre, and then what inspired you for this specific genre?
Right. Oh my goodness. To Love a Grim has been so fun. So this is the book, To Love a Grim. It is a Cinderella retelling, but it also is highly steeped in all the Grimm tales. There's like 15 Grimm tales. I started getting lost. Losing count halfway through the book. So there might be more. I just threw them in there because I love the Grimm tales. But the fun thing about this story is it all began for me when my family did a trip in Germany.
Okay.
And we went to the Liechtenstein Castle and got to hike the castle. And I don't know if you've seen that castle, but it's so beautiful. It's very gothic in its feel and mood and setting with the high cliffs and the mist that curls around it. And after we toured the castle that night, we went down below and saw the castle glittering up above while we're eating dinner at the manor. And there was all of a sudden this big party that burst onto scene. And there was people dancing and there's music going. It was just wild. And I'm like, oh my goodness, like what's happening up there? And the manor owner was like, oh, the Duke is having a party. And he has parties from time to time, and all the, you know, rich, fancy people get invited. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, well, I want to go to that party. So, I mean, that's how I felt about Cinderella. Like, that's what she must have been feeling, that need and the desire to kind of escape this life that she had. And it made me think about Jacob Grimm and his brother Wilhelm and how they wrote the Grimm tales. And we were in Germany touring these places. Mm-hmm. And so I went back home and started just devouring the tales, and not just the tales, but also the lives of the Grimm brothers, like what inspired them to write these tales.
Mm-hmm.
And using all of that, I wrote this gothic, forbidden romanticy about this guy named Jacob Grimm, based a lot on his life, heavily, and how he's cursed by this enchantress to write stories of all these forbidden people that had been spilling from her realm into our realm, and he's supposed to get them out with the stories. And as he meets, you know, different characters, we learn a little bit about them, including Ella, and she starts helping him until she realizes, oh, well, maybe we're enemies, actually. Maybe we should be helping each other. Kind of the whole story from beginning and end of To Love a Grim.
Oh, my goodness. That is so cool. So I know originally Madison was supposed to be here, and Cinderella is her favorite of all the princesses. Okay. So she was super excited for this. And I'm really sad that she's not here to hear this, because that is such a cool story. But I guess, well, one of her questions was, has Cinderella always been one of your favorites? But really, it sounded like you just had a moment where you felt like Cinderella and that inspired this novel.
Absolutely. Like, I've always wondered why Cinderella didn't just get up and do something, like the French tail. And then, and the German tail is pretty rough. Like, it's pretty bad. Mm-hmm. Like, the dad comes to the, she's at the ball and he thinks he sees her at the ball. And he, she runs into the chicken coop to escape him. And mm-hmm. he, like, takes this axe and rips down the chicken's coop. And I'm like, oh my goodness, like, this is bad. And I'm like, why? That's in the story, by the way. Am I, why this is happening? What is she doing about this? And mm-hmm. I think sometimes we think that power is only in like the sword and the, you know, mm-hmm. the magic. I mean, she, there is magic in it, but there's more to it. And it's a different way to show that. And mm-hmm. I wanted to bring that into the story, that women can be powerful in different ways. And maybe it's not through strength and bruteness, it's through other ways, being clever and smart. And accepting who you are inside and using your abilities to become this powerful person. And so that's really where I started exploring this fairy tale. It really stemmed from that. Now, I live in Orlando area, and I used to work for Disney, and I was a friend to the princesses, so I do know a lot about those. Mm-hmm. And so she, I did love Cinderella. Well, I wasn't a friend to Cinderella. I was a friend to some other ones. Mm-hmm. But I always loved her story. So that's okay. A little bit about that.
So is there a possibility that there might be another retelling of a different princess story?
Absolutely.
Maybe?
Like, I am such a fan of the princesses. I was a friend to the Little Mermaid.
Okay.
And so I have lots of stories about that, too. But we won't say those. But I'm writing it right now to Love a Siren. And it's okay. a Little Mermaid retelling with Hans Christian Andersen, who wrote her story. Mm-hmm. And I'm not real happy with Hans Christian Andersen, the way he wrote her story. Yeah. Awful, awful. So he's getting a little bit of a makeover. the story is still. But we can do that. You know, as women, we can write stories how we want to write them. And then the third one will be Till the Beast, which okay. is my favorite retelling. And I was also friends with Belle. And she's my favorite princess. And so I'm really okay. looking forward to writing that one. I did Love a Siren because Hans Christian Andersen actually meets Jacob Grimm in real life. And I thought how fun that would be to bring these two masters together as they had their conversation in real life. Take that same very conversation, twist it around to meet my world. So that was fun. That's actually the same conversation that they had in real life, but I've kind of like adjusted a little bit.
That's
but
cool.
That was super fun to do.
Yeah, that is crazy. Every time I chat with authors, like just hearing how your guys' brains work through your stories or create them, like all of you are so imaginative and creative and like,
oh,
I don't know.
You.
I don't know how you guys rework or make all of these stories happen because I love reading them and that's about all I can do. I have no idea how you guys create these really intricate stories that kind of all work together, especially when you're making a series, which, Rowan, you're working on a series. The book that we're talking about today is Of Withering Dreams, and that's book one. When you started, did you know that it was going to be a series as well?
So when I started, I knew it would be 3 or 4 books. And then as I was writing, people seemed to really latch on to some of the side characters. Or I tortured some side characters way too much. And I was like, you know, I think they really need their own love story. People don't like, you know, want to kill me. So yeah, it just kind of expanded from there. That first trilogy is done. So I'm super excited about that as of January. And then I know I'm like, oh. And then there'll be 2 interconnected series that branch off of it with 2 side
awesome.
Characters. Yeah,
okay.
Which I'm writing the next one right now, and it's my first Why Choose romance, so that's been interesting because having to get into 3 different heads, I'm like, I don't know. this is a lot, but yeah, no, it's fun.
That's fun. So cool.
Yeah.
We recently talked to, speaking of Why Chooses, Jade Presley, who wrote The Neverlist, and there's 4 princes to 1, and she was talking about that too. She's like, it took me forever. to figure out each of their voices and how they're going to connect. And
right.
so she's like, it's a different beast figuring out that kind of world.
Yeah, just making sure they're distinct because I write from first person past tense. And so having to be in their heads is, you know, you have to make them distinct. Mm-hmm. So it's a challenge. But the first one is male-female relationship. So having 2 was fine. But now I'm like, oh, let's see how this works.
For sure. So if you want to actually tell us a little bit about Of Withering Dreams, and then maybe the rest of the series, because you finished this trilogy in under a year. which is absolutely wild. Book one came out in March. Book two came out in July of last year.
Yes.
And then book three came out this January. That is absolutely crazy.
Yeah. Let's okay. So I have no life. It's fine. I love writing. The first book did, I did have a little bit of lead time because the first book did take me a year and a half. And then I had that and I had some time to write the next two. But now my brain's like, hey, you can do a book in every 4 to 6 months. And my heart and body is like, you're insane, but I'm going to try. So we'll see. So, okay. The series in general is about a dying world where people are forced to go into a magical 6 month sleep to conserve resources. And during that half of the year, they don't remember anything. I don't know if people have seen the show Severance. When I say it, not a lot of people have seen it, but it's kind of like that, like half your life normal, half your life, you don't know what's going on. Mm-hmm. But what's happening is they're being portaled into this dream realm. And so there's a lot of very loosely based Greek mythology, like very, I've took liberties, kind of vibes to it, gothic vibes, mythological creatures, monsters, and rebellions brewing. There's some high stake trials, quests, and they're just kind of navigating this dream world. But when they wake up, they don't remember that they've been there. So there's some twists and turns. I do like to say like the love situation is love triangle-ish. So for people who don't like love triangles, I'm like, I promise you'll be fine. Because I say ish because it's this weird twist at the end.
I love love triangles. I think I'm one of the only three of us.
I like them too.
I love them.
I like them.
I don't mind them. I just
love triangle.
Why not? Right? I grew up on like Twilight, so I'm like, I'm fine. But no, I'm like, by the second book, she definitely picks one. She's not flip flopping around. So, yeah. It's a fun ride. It was fun writing it too.
Yeah. So with all of them being published under a year, how did you tackle that? Like, what's the process like of doing that? And are they all three indie as well? Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. So how did you make that happen?
A lot of panic attacks and Cheetos. I don't know. It's a lot. I write on my phone too. So like when I'm in bed, I'll write, or when I have a break at my day job, I'll write. It's just nonstop. My husband's like, are you gonna come hang out with me? I was like, I gotta write. Like, I love you, but no. It's been insane. And then learning the indie publishing industry is wild because I kind of crash coursed my way through that in a year and it was insane. I had no idea. I had no idea what I was getting myself in.
Yeah. Well, and that's what from doing this segment and being able to talk with so many different indie authors, like I can't imagine because you got to find people for your marketing to make the books. You pay for all of that out of pocket, which is crazy. But like, each and every one of you love your stories so much because you get to write it how you want to write it. Which, Christina, I know that you've published indie and also traditional.
Correct.
So are there things that you wish maybe the traditional side did more from the indie side or vice versa? Which way do you like better?
I mean, they're both different. They're both very different. And some of the things are the same too. I don't have anything that would say the traditional side should do more or differently. I feel like I had a lot of support with my books. The publishers were both great. I was published with Scholastic with my middle grade and Amazon's Skyscape imprint. Although that imprint's kind of faded and gone now. And then with Blackstone and Lerner as well. So I've had a lot of different publishers. They've all been great. And now I'm doing indie and I have some things in the works traditionally too. So I'm kind of doing both. And I think for myself, the biggest thing, I'm so glad I did indie. I started out with Kindle Vella. That's how I got into it. Mm-hmm. And my friend Beth Revis was the one who kind of was like, hey, let's do Kindle Vella together. I'm like, okay, let's do it. You know, I don't know. It was just some like random thing to do because we didn't have enough to do as it was, right? but when I started doing that, I realized I was gaining an audience and I was able to write for an audience like in real time. Mm-hmm. And I was gaining all these new followers and readers that I just loved to write for. And they would be asking me, because in Vella, we were able to kind of interact with each other. And they're like, we like this and we don't like this. I did the Immortal Secret series and the Dreamscape series through that. Mm-hmm. And I had so much fun. And I'm like, I have gotten my joy for writing the back. I mean, I liked writing as a traditional author, but there's something about indie that there's no barriers set in place and there's no like chain of command. Like first you descend to the agent, the agent's got to give a bunch of stuff to it and you kind of feel like you lose a little bit of your voice. Mm-hmm. And then you go to your editor and then you once again do a bunch of edits and or the publisher's like, no, we really don't do this anymore. We're not buying this anymore. We want to buy this, this, and this. And I'm like, I don't write that and that, you know? And so now I'm able to just have so much freedom and I love it. I mean, I love it. And I just, every day now I sit down to write and it's with so much passion and joy. I think the biggest word for me for indie is joy. Like traditional publishing is great and you get the validation, I guess. I have had movie deal. I've had a, you know, option for movie deals and my books have done well there, but there wasn't the type of joy that I have with indie. And I would say for anybody, like if you are in traditional publishing and you're losing that joy, go write for indie. Like go write for yourself. And remember the passion, the love that you have for your characters and your worlds. And I just love it. And now I can choose my covers. I'm like, now I can choose all the colors that I like. And I can choose all the artwork I like. And I can write this book how I want to write it. And so that has been amazing. Nothing against traditional publishing. It's a business. It's a business. Mm-hmm. And even in is a business too. I totally get that. And I have no qualms one way or the other. You just have to go into it knowing it is a business and take it as it is. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the biggest takeaway I have from that.
That makes sense. I know a lot of indie authors to create their book covers. Usually they work with artists or sometimes they even create it themselves. Mm-hmm. So Christina, To Love a Grim, this one specifically, how did you make this cover?
This is through Paul at Thrift Designs did this. He actually does all my covers except for my rom-com is by Moods and Books, and they do really cute rom-coms. I just love it. It's adorable. Okay. But all my fantasy books are all done by him, and I am, like, obsessed with his work. He's so great. I send him a bunch of, like, sketches and images and I'm like, I want this and kind of like this, and then he takes it and he's like, here you go, and I'm like, it's perfect. So I'm like, I have to work with you forever. He's working on To Love a Siren right now, that cover. Okay. I think he should have that ready in April, but the book is not finished. I'm slow to writing. I'm not fast like you, but I'm excited about that and I just love it. And then I have different artists that I hire and I'm always looking for new artists to work with. And that's so much fun. I'm like on wait list for things. You have to like wait forever for some artists that you really like. But yeah. So great.
Awesome. And then Rowan, for you, how did you create your book cover for, well, I guess maybe for all three of them.
Yeah.
But specifically for Of Withering Dreams.
Yes. No, all three of them, I do them myself.
Okay.
Wow. I taught myself how to use Affinity programming, which is like Adobe, but without a subscription.
I'm so impressed.
I grabbed it. Yeah, but that's the first one.
My God.
Yeah, I'm obsessed. I still don't know what I'm doing. What I do is I spend months clicking buttons, and after I find my stock image I want, and I'm like, what does this effect do? I'm going to add 20 layers of sparkles, like what, until I'm like, it's passable. This is the cover now.
They're beautiful. I mean, I would have no idea. They all look beautiful and they all kind of go together too.
Yeah.
Like they look like
A
series together.
Thank you. Yeah. So I used a lot of the background like layers I had, and I just changed colors or effects so they kind of all vibed. And I'm trying to work on the fourth one now, but without a face stock image. Mm. And it's a little more challenging. I don't know why the face is easier for me, but I'm trying to do it more in line with what's on the market, like, you know, image, like swords and all that. But I'm not sure if I'm feeling it yet. So maybe I'll just go back to a face. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like every fantasy book, you know, it's a fantasy book because it has either a dragon on it or a sword or a crown. Those are like the three main. So I feel like that's something cool, though, of indie that you can be like, I'm going to do what I want, actually, instead. Forget that.
That's my favorite part. Like Christina was saying, it's just being able to do what I want when I want, and no one can be like, hey, those Facebooks probably aren't to market. And I'll be like, I don't care. I like them. Because I'm my own boss. Yeah. It's crazy. I love the what Christina said about the joy being the word for that. Absolutely. I mean, there's ups and downs, but being an indie author is super rewarding too, because it also enables you to just, you're forced to build a community because you need to. Yes. And so being able to meet so many different authors and readers, it's been really, really special. I would call, aside from joy, I would say it's delicious chaos is what an indie author feels like. But it's awesome. It's a fun experience too.
I feel like everybody in this community just like wants everybody to succeed and help each other. So I really love that. I love that you guys are both have such great experiences with the indie world. Okay, so this is a question for both of you. How has writing or being an author influenced the way that you guys read?
Yeah, sometimes it's kind of a negative thing. Because you start analyzing. You're sitting there and analyzing everything. Like, how did the author open the story? Mm-hmm. How did the author develop the characters? Where did the author plant their clues? And I'm pretty good at, it's very hard for me to miss a plot twist. I pretty much, you always guess the plot twist. And it's not that the author's done a bad job. I'm just looking for it. I know where they should be at and how they should be developed. And so that part's been ruined. But you know, sometimes some authors have this way to make me forget that I'm reading, make me forget that I'm trying to learn and analyze. So if I can find those authors that just pull me into the story and I forget that, then I really love those books. I mean, I'm like, oh, thank you. I needed to escape. And then I have to go back and analyze, why did they make this so good, right? But I read a lot. I read widely, not just in my genre. I read everything. And I started off with YA and then I did middle grade. Grade, and I've done chapter books, and now I'm doing adult books. So I've written in lots of different types of forms of writing. I've written some screenplays. I mean, I've written anything and everything. But I think that's really good to read widely because you learn so much. I think when you bring in like a mystery into your story, and you learn, mysteries are very compelling. So you're making your story very compelling. So like, I can learn so much from a mystery writer, or I can learn so much from a thriller writer, like bringing little thrills into it. Even if it's like a rom-com, like my rom-com that I have is totally like, just not like grim. Not at all. It's like whimsical, light, and it's frivolous, and it's like not meant to be taken seriously. It's a choose your own adventure story. So, but then Grimm is like super serious, like the world is coming to an end, and it's all like we're gonna cry. You might cry. So I love.
Spoiler.
But just get to the end. It's happily ever after, I promise. But I mean, like, I love that. I love reading different types of things. You can just gain more skills and put into your arsenal. So. Reading widely is fabulous, and it's just, it brings you so much joy to see what other authors in different genres are doing.
Rowan, I mean, you were nodding a lot, so I feel like you kind of feel that too.
What Christina said. No, absolutely. I've always been a mood reader, so I read as well all different genres as well. And I think that's benefited me as a writer because although I write in dark fantasy, it's has more of like dystopian sci-fi gothic vibes, you know what I mean? Because it adds just different layers from what I read. But because I'm a mood reader and now that I'm writing in dark fantasy, I'm having difficulty reading fantasy romances right now because I don't want to influence my writing in any way, or I'm already immersed in my world, so I don't want to do that. So I've been reading outside of that genre, like horror romance or, you know, paranormal, stuff like that. So it's not related to what I'm writing.
Yeah.
But same thing. I've always been really good at, like, in movies, books, finding plot twists. But now it's, like you said, I'm, like, extra good at it. Like, my husband and I had to make a pact, like, when we're watching shows or whatever. He's like, don't say anything. Don't even make a face. Yes. And I'm like, so I'm sitting there, I'm like, I know the answer. He's like, just stop. You're ruining it. And so, yeah, that's the whole thing. Yeah. And I used to read before I was writing, I used to read a book in like 2 days. Mm-hmm. I don't have the time to do that because obviously I'm like just writing all day. Mm-hmm. So that's been kind of sad for me because I'm not getting to read as much as I'd like to.
Do you find that because you're reading stuff all day and writing all day that when you go to sit down to read, your brain's like, no, we're not doing words anymore. Do you feel that way?
Absolutely. Because my brain wants to think about my story. And like, I'm just like, I need to focus my energy on that. So yeah,
I'm a big audiobook listener, especially with having a baby now. I live off audiobooks.
Yes.
So does that sometimes, I mean, does that translate, would you say, even with audiobooks where you're like, it feels the same as reading? Or I know like there's those graphic audiobooks now where it almost sounds like you're listening to a movie. Have you guys tried those?
No.
I haven't.
I've
heard of them.
I would love for you to try them then tell me, I mean, you don't have to, but it would be so interesting with everything that you said, if you tried one of those, if it would change that, if maybe it felt more like a movie where you could actually enjoy it versus where you're like, I'm physically reading this book and I'm thinking about every word I'm looking at.
Yeah, that's such a good idea. I love that you brought up audiobooks. I guess you're right. Yeah, audiobooks don't feel the same to me. So I've like right now I'm finishing the Outlander series on audiobook because those are such like, those are thick babies. So I'm like, I'll listen to it when I walk the dog or whatever. And that, you're right, that does not feel as overwhelming to me because it's relaxing because it's a different, you know, medium to consume it. So yeah. Audiobooks feel different for me.
I was going to say, since I have switched, it's kind of the same thing. Like I can do it or I can listen while I'm doing anything.
Right.
And sometimes I'm like, I didn't even realize that I've listened to half a book today because I'm listening to a story, but I'm getting all this other stuff done. Mm-hmm. Whereas sitting down and reading, I don't have the time for that anymore. How has your writing evolved from your first story you ever wrote or even your first draft to now? Rowan, we'll start with you for this one.
Sure. I was just talking to someone about this because obviously A Wuthering Dream was my first published book. Mm-hmm. And I used, when I was younger, I've always written random stories and poetry. And so sometimes my writing's a little like lyrical, kind of, you know, let's explain this beautiful scene in 10 pages and everyone's like calm down, or they're really like it's you know, to each their own. But I feel like as I've been writing, I'm kind of tightening up on sections like that, like trying to get more impactful with my words instead of, because I'm not writing poetry, you know, like stop, get out of here. So yeah, that's kind of changed. And then I think you just, the more you write, the more you develop your style and you grow. So like some things have changed because I am trying to get books out faster. When I wrote the first book and it took a year and a half, I was going back and rereading every sentence and it was just like taking me so long because I was just fixating on things. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember the book, I'll have to look, but I read this book for like authors and just like chilling the heck out. And so the whole point was like, you write a crappy first draft, you can fix it. And so that's how I've been able to push forward. I'm just like writing. And I know I'm going to have a billion edits, but that's fine because you can't edit a story you don't have on paper. So, you know, just write that draft and get it out and then fix it. So that's why I love that. Yeah.
I love that. That, I mean, that's a great way to think about it. Yeah. I love that you said that, getting the story out and then edit. You can't edit a story that's not written. So that's awesome.
I think too, so I know some of my author friends, and I love this because everyone's journey is different, and they're going back to their first, like their debut, and they're rewriting it and fixing it and going to republish it. I'm like, that's super brave. That's amazing. For me, I feel like my writing is a time capsule. So I'm just going to leave it alone. And that's what it was at that point in, you know, my journey. And, you know, move on. And that's, I don't know, I think both ways are interesting, but
That is interesting. So Christina, for you, how do you feel like your writing has evolved from your first story or first draft to now?
It's evolved a lot. Oh my gosh. I remember I had this, you know, this grand idea to be a writer. And because I started writing, I had a bucket list and write different things on my bucket list. And one of the things was to write a book. I don't know why I put it on there. So then I started writing this book, and my husband, I just had babies, two little boys, and I was like, diapers, and I'm just losing my mind. I need like to think. And so my husband used to do this. He was a writer, and he used to go to this critique group, and they would have like wine and cheese, and they would go off and have this fun stuff. And I'm like, I want to go. I want to get a babysitter and go. So I started bringing my drafts, which were really bad, actually. But they were very nice to me. They're like, they just put up with me. And I remember I put a lot of work into it. And the group just ripped it to shreds. Not in a mean way, but they did. And I remember I started crying. And it wasn't because they were ripping me to shreds. Like, that wasn't it. I just realized how much work I had to do. Like, how bad it was. And I'm like, but how much I wanted to improve and become a better writer. And I realize this is going to be a lot of work. Like, I have a huge mountain to climb in front of me. It just dawned on me. And that was kind of a turning point for me in my career. And so since then, I've been writing more and more. And I actually pulled out the Mortal Secret series. It was actually an old book I wrote actually before Gilded, which was my debut novel that was published traditionally. And I had written that book, and it was so hard because it was a big world, and I didn't know what I was doing, and I had complicated things in it. And I pulled that back out, and I looked at it, and I'm like, oh, wow, like, I have changed so much in the last period of time as a writer. And even since I've written the first book in that series to the new book that's coming out, I have a new book, and that's been just 2 years, that book is so much better, twice as good. And I'm like, wow. And I wrote it super fast considering, right? But that's also an encouragement. It's an encouragement that as we, whatever craft we do and whatever we're working on, as we build and we develop it and we put time and effort into it, we become better. And we can only get better as we go. And it's believing in yourself, believing in your skills, not listening to all the lies that come at you, the rejections or the bad reviews or people who are just, you know, saying don't resonate with your work. You got to just believe in what you're doing. And so now, like, I feel like, yes, I'm a much better writer than I was before. And I'm happy. I had to work so hard, so hard. But interestingly, that crit group back in Korea, when I was living in Korea, that none of them are published. None of them are published. And I'm published and I'm still writing books. Even some of them are indie, some are trad, but I'm writing. They're not. And it goes to show that passion takes you so far.
They were just there for the snacks.
I was there for the snacks too, though.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Awesome. Is there a scene that either of you wrote within these books that you really struggled with, but you are so proud of or you love it now?
Yeah. So with the first book of Withering Dreams, there's a scene in the first, like, three, I think it's the third chapter, where a very important character, they die. I unalive them. And it's very traumatic and emotional, and it has far-reaching implications for, like, a character, an important character. Mm-hmm. And that was very, I didn't realize how emotional it would be and how some of, like, my stuff would come out while I was writing it. And this is kind of random, but I was actually on a girls' trip in California in the redwoods. And it was just like this beautiful spiritual nature, you know, all around me. And I'm like crying as I'm writing on my phone. And my friends are just trying to have a bonfire. And they're like, what's wrong with you? I'm like, don't worry about it. I'm processing things. It was very emotional. And I just, I didn't realize that would happen. And now that I look back and if I read it, I'm like, that was very cathartic. And I'm just, I'm very proud of that and how it turned out. But yeah. It was surprising. Just enjoy the bonfire. What's wrong with me?
Yeah, well, The Grim was really hard to write because the very first version I did of it, I pantsed it. Like, I didn't plot it. It's the only book I did not plot. And because I heard someone talk at a conference and like, you should try both types, you know, plotting and pantsing. I'm like, yay, that sounds like a great idea. I want to be like versatile and try different things, which is a horrible idea because this was an absolute train wreck. I don't recommend it for my type of brain because I went off. It was just so bad, super bad. So I had to redo it. So much of this book. I had to rewrite it so many times. But the meet cute was a problem. The meet cute was a disaster. It was just a wreck. It was not, there was no cuteness or meatness. I don't know. It was a meatness. There was meat. They met. That was about it. So I had to revise that so many times. And I wanted the meet cute to symbolize things too, because I just get into my head about things. I wanted to symbolize a lot of different elements and foreshadow the culmination of their relationship. I wanted to do a bunch of things with that. Readers may never see that, but I wanted it in my head. So it took me a long time to write it, but I'm very happy with how it turned out now. So I'm about to do the meet cute for Telema Siren, and that's going to be explosive because she's going to have a trident and he's a hunter and it's not going to go well. So I'm pretty excited about it.
Since you've done the first one now and you kind of have a vibe or feel for what you want in this series, do you think it might be a little bit easier or do you think it maybe have the same challenges because it's a completely different story that you're trying to rewrite?
Well, I plotted this one.
Okay.
That's all plotted. So yeah, it's plotted out, but it is still hard because I'm taking Hans Christian Andersen's actual life, his real life, real person, and I'm taking his fairy tale, The Mermaid, and I have to change some things because I don't like the ending because she they don't get together. The prince and the mermaid don't get together. And that's not going to happen. And then there's also all his little fairy tales that he writes. Their characters, they're going to be running around all the place. It's a little complicated because I just seem to love to make things complicated. But I think it's definitely going to be easier. It's not going to take me multiple years to write this thing. Yeah. I'm going to hopefully write it in 6 months. I started researching it and brainstorming and crafting it back in November. I'm starting to write it now. I'm getting the vibes and the feel of it. It took me a while to plot it. But once I plot it, then I kind of know what's happening and I can go write it a lot faster.
Can I ask? So you've written stories that you have completely made from scratch. And then you have the retellings that you're doing now. Do you think one is harder than the other?
Yeah, I think the retellings can be harder for me.
Okay.
In some ways, it's easier because you have something to start with. But you are building. The Grimm tale was pretty true to the Cinderella retelling, which is why it was I was confined into a little, you know, thing. So I feel like for me, if I'm writing a true fantasy not attached to our world, I've written all kinds of stuff, but a fantasy not attached to our world, I think that's easier. If I'm writing a rom-com that's just frivolous and light, it's easier for me. These are for me. But if I'm writing a contemporary fantasy, that's hard because I have fantasy in our world and our world is very confines the fantasy. So it becomes difficult. And then retellings, oh my gosh, you have all these. The more constraints you give to the story, that I feel like for me, they'd become more difficult. So
that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. So my next project, my next series, I'm like, I was thinking, and this needs to be in a fantasy world where I can make everything up and there's no rules and I can make the rules. Part of this.
I love that.
That's fair. Go ahead. Go ahead.
No, I love that because mine aren't retellings, but they have a lot of Greek mythology names and like background. And so for me, because Greek mythology is kind of a hot mess anyway, like there's so many different versions and all these whatever. So for me, it was like sifting through like, well, I don't want it to be exactly that, but could this person, could this god and this god have a baby? And would that make sense? Because they didn't really have a baby. I'm like, wait, are they brothers and sisters? Like, I need to, I can't
start questioning.
You know what I mean? It's like weaving through that. So it's not weird. But yeah, so that's been interesting.
I can imagine.
I just can't. I cannot imagine how you guys do it. Like, it blows me away. Just hearing, like, every time I meet an author, I'm like, oh my gosh, how do you guys do it? I mean, every single one of you have a passion for it, but
I think we're all a little bit crazy.
Yes.
In a fun 100%. Way.
In a good way. In a good way. I love that. I love that. Okay, so if you guys could give advice to a baby indie author, what would it be? Christina, let's start with you.
Well, first of all, I always say to people, find the joy in what you're doing, whatever you're doing. Find the joy. And if you find the joy in it and you remember why you started doing what you started, then you're going to go far and you're going to go long. And it's going to be it's going to be a tough journey. It's going to be hard, but it's going to be worth it. So I think that's the most important thing. And then the second thing is, you know, just remember, this is just your first. Every book is building on the next. They're like, you're building a house, right? And every book is building towards a house. And I think that was the hard thing for me as a traditional author is I wasn't able to really build the house. I was building somebody else's house. And so all my books were like whatever they wanted and they needed. And that was fine. It works. I learned. But now as an indie author, I am building my own house, my lands and my worlds. And it's great. And so thinking about it's not just one book, it's multiple books and it's a slow build and you're going to find your audience. Look for your audience. Look for the people who are passionate about your books because those are the people you're writing for and they are just amazing. Like the people, my readers are just absolutely amazing and I'll write anything for them and they'll read it and it's great. And I'm like, I love you all. So I think if you think of it that way, it changes your whole focus and you don't worry about like getting a bestseller list or all these other things. It just, that's not really what this is about. I don't feel like for me, it's what it's about for me, but everyone has their own things, of course, but that would be my advice.
I love that.
I love that.
I think finding the joy I think it's easy to get lost in the weeds or compare yourself to others, especially because it's so important for authors nowadays to be so involved in social media for like their marketing and getting the word out. And it's easy to see, you know, other books maybe doing better or whatever, but everyone's journey is different. So, you know, finding that joy, like you said, is so, so important. Like, you started this for a reason. It wasn't to get followers or maybe it was. I don't know. You know what I mean? So like you have, you have to keep that passion and write, pretend like you're writing for yourself or something you'd want to read as a reader, you know what I mean? And your community will find you. And I think another big thing I learned as far as community goes is this isn't, it's not a one-way street. So you have to be able to give of yourself, at least with engaging with readers. And, you know, you're excited about your book, they're excited. So like, be like, thank you so much. Like, you're amazing, and give back in that way, just even simply through engagement, because they're supporting you and they're the ones like spreading the word. And, you know, it's just, it's so important. I didn't realize when I started my author socials, I was like, I'm just going to post about my books and blah, blah, blah. Cause I never was a part of Bookstagram in this side of the world. And when I'm like, oh my gosh, this is especially romance readers, we are voracious. Like, we want to be part of this bigger thing. And so you have to be part of it. And, you know, at least minimally to have that community. And then the crappy first draft. Just don't be a perfectionist. Just get it out. You can fix it. I think that's a huge thing. So.
I love that. So to end this, I would love for each of you to share your favorite line from your book. Rowan, let's start with you then.
Sure. I mean, I actually, because I've been asked this before, and because I used to write poetry, I have a lot of like little weird paragraphs I love. It's like, calm down. So there's one. So I was a big Princess Bride fan.
Oh, that's a good one.
Right? Classic. And so I loved when he said, as you wish, he was really saying, I love you. Mm-hmm. And so in my series, in the first trilogy, so the Nether Void is like the nightmare realm. And so it's like hell, nightmare realm. And so they start saying like, to the Nether Void and beyond, like, I'll find you to the Nether, you know, whatever. And so for most of the series, they never say, I love you until like, I don't know, maybe the last book, but they're always saying that. And I just like, I love that. So that's
so beautiful. I love
that. Thanks, Princess Bride.
Christina?
Well, mine's kind of similar in that feel. Mine's very short. It's, you'll always be my fairy tale. And for me, that means so much to Jacob Grimm, because he's the one writing the fairy tales, right? And I don't want to give up the ending, but
that's fair.
The reason why he says this.
And it'll break your heart, and then hopefully your heart will be mended.
I love that.
But yeah, I think that whole idea is that we're always looking for the companion, a mate that would be our fairy tale. Like, we're looking for, we resonate with that because we're searching for that. So I think that was a big part of this book, is that it's lots of yearning going on and that desire to have the fairy tale. And how can it be? So,
I feel like that is such a human thing. Like, everybody wants to find their place or find their person or have that community or feeling, whether it be in a relationship, whether it be your friends or your family. Yeah, exactly. I feel like everybody always resonates with those kind of things. Yeah, I love that. Oh, I love both of those. Those are so good. So before I do the outro, Madison had one question that she really wanted me to ask you guys. And this is like a really fun one-off. You know, it's about Cinderella. But she needs to know from each of you what your favorite Cinderella movie is, since there are so many of them.
That's
true. That's a good one.
Say, do either of you have an answer yet, or do we need to think about it?
I can't believe this is the question that stumps me.
Everybody liked Is It Ever After with, what's her name? I'm so sorry.
Drew Barrymore.
Yes, Drew Barrymore. I really like that.
Agree.
And that's actually probably the closest to my book. Because that's more, it's more similar to the Grimm tale. Not totally, but it's more similar. So Ever After would be closest to my book. My book is more gothic and more romantic, like definitely more romance, like than that. I think that would be my favorite.
Yeah, okay. I would agree. That was probably one of my top 10 I watched over and over when it came out. But yeah, I would agree. I mean, the Disney version has a place in my heart, just like imprinted on my child brain. Yeah. But Ever After, that's a whole nother level. And it just was so beautiful, and the cinematography, so good. Love it.
Yes.
Love that. Love it. All right. Well, thank you guys both again so much for joining me today. I had so much fun getting to hear from both of you and see how your brains work and how you write things. It's just crazy to me. I love hearing from each author how it just comes out of them, how they're able to write these amazing stories. So book three of the Fate of the Emberd series by Rowan Adelaide is out now. So the whole trilogy is out. Yeah. And To Love a Grim by Christina Farley is also out now. And like we heard, for both of them, there are books in the works. So keep your eyes out. If you enjoyed this episode, remember to like, share, and subscribe. And we'll see you next time for Indie Talk.
Bye.
John Daly here. You know what day it is? Neither do I. I live life daily. That's why I only spin on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily, and the best part, guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto, America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.